Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world. It's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win!
Pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Glad to have you guys along, no matter where or how you're listening, whether it's on one of our great radio station affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref in Evansville, always the right call, or up in the region, on the voice of the region, in Hammond, in all of Chicago, on 1380 The Or not 1380 The Fan. That's in Fort Wayne on Fort Wayne's only sports station. But WJOB is the voice of the region. 1230 AM, 104.7 FM. Glad to have you along, no matter where or how. Whether it's on social media, if you are, please hit the like and subscribe buttons. Glad to have you. Hope you're enjoying this unbelievably beautiful day. But we've had so many of those. We have been so fortunate with this weather. It has been unbelievable, and man, going to continue. It's going to get a little warmer, but that's okay. Game days will be fine. This week's game day, of course. Let's see, what's the weather for Saturday? Going to be a high of 88. Nothing but sunshine. Man, looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to next week already, though. I'm not going to lie. The Indiana-Illinois game. 7:30 kickoff on Saturday night under the lights. National television. Whoo! But, like the players and the coaches, you got to take them one game at a time. Indiana State rolls in this week on a Friday night, unfortunately. And in Bloomington, it's really unfortunate because you have Bloomington North playing Bloomington South High School. That's not the first time that's happened either. I think Indiana has had a Friday game before that on a same situation. Bad deal, but you live. Looking forward to another fun day. Dylan Sin will be joining us. Kyle Nednerip, Zach Browning will get caught up on high school, Indiana, and Purdue. Notre Dame, whatever you want to talk about. Notre Dame already has a loss. Are they going to be able to get through the season, get through their schedule without, and they're a good team. They might be a better team to start the season than they were last season. I think Indiana might be a better team. I've said that all along. What they have may be better, but last year they were in sync faster. The Blue Ribbon Basketball Yearbook has picked Indiana. Last year they picked Indiana to win the Big Ten, which all of us, including myself, bought into the hype of the talent that was there, but we did not allow for, how do you say this? It's like having the best ingredients put together. You put the great ingredients in the kitchen, but you send in somebody who just can't cook. You've got all the ingredients for a great paella, but they just can't cook. If you don't put the ingredients together the right way, it doesn't work. And that's exactly what Indiana basketball had last year. This year, Blue Ribbon is picking them to finish ninth. It's ironic. They may not have the quote-unquote talent that it appeared to have last season, but they're in much better hands. They're in the hands of a chef now. So a chef can take less and make more. A chef can go into a kitchen and take basic ingredients and create something kind of nice. That's what I expect to see. That is what I am expecting from IU basketball and Darren DeVries. He knows what he's doing. He knows what he wants. He knows what he needs to get out of the players that he has. And his talent level is going to continue to rise. We've talked about that with Kurt Cignetti. The talent level on that side will continue to rise as recruiting continues to grow. Ninth is a possibility. The Big Ten is going to be rough. Michigan and Purdue already so strong. Illinois, Michigan State, UCLA. Who's going to climb up below that? I mean, that top five, there it's pretty solid. Now, the next five, there's going to be some room. So, be very interesting. Chef DeVries, there you go. How'd you like that analogy? Just thought of that. I think it's a proper one. I think it works. You agree? Yes. It looks like the decision for Lewis Moore has not come out yet, I don't think. Has it? It comes today. I don't think it's come this just yet, but looking forward to that. I don't see how he loses, to be honest with you. I said that in the beginning. There's just too many precedents already set. And we'll talk about that when Dylan joins us, as well as Zach. High school football this weekend goes to week four. That's crazy. I guess I missed it, but he's been awarded two more weeks. We'll talk about that. Yeah, exactly. Andy, you say it best. Lewis Moore granted two more games, which puts him good through the Illinois game. They keep kicking the can down the road. Yeah, I agree with that. Again, how are you going to allow a guy to play in the first third of the season now and then say, okay, now you can't play? It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. It is nut. It's a nutty thing. It is crazy. I agree with you, Mike. Shenanigans. It is nuts, but it is what it is. I mean, why they're doing it that way, it's a little crazy. But you just have to accept it. Yeah, that came out earlier than I expected, but so Lewis Moore will be in there for the showdown with Illinois. His attorney, Brian Lawton, and NCAA's attorney, Taylor Askew, have mutually agreed to push back his hearing to no earlier than September 24th. We'll talk more about this when Dylan Sin joins us from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. And he'll join us right after these messages. Glad to have you. We're back right after this. Back Indiana Sports Beat Radio here on this Wednesday. Looking forward to talking to Dylan Sin when he joins us here in just a second. We were talking about Lewis Moore as how he was granted two more games, I guess you would say. Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. How are you, brother?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, as always, Jim.
Always a pleasure. Talking, of course, about Lewis Moore in the unique situation now. I was wondering how he was granted two more weeks already when the decision was supposed to come later today. So I was a little surprised to see that, but it was because of a mutual agreement between the attorneys, which, again, how on God's green earth does anybody expect to allow a player to play a third of the season and then say, oh, okay, no, you're not eligible. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know exactly what the plan is here. I think the agreement they came to is related to discovery that that Lewis Moore's lawyers are trying to get from the NCAA. Because the NCAA is basically saying that you shouldn't have filed this lawsuit in Texas. You should have filed it in Indiana. And Lewis Moore's attorneys are saying, no, you guys do business in Texas, right? Therefore, it's perfectly acceptable. Yeah. And so they're basically saying you are also the NCAA does business in Texas. So it's totally fine for us to do file the lawsuit there. The judge basically said, all right, you can get information from the NCAA on what kind of business they do in Texas. And I'll make a ruling on whether to dismiss it on those grounds. And so I think the NCAA needs more time for that discovery process. I think that that's kind of what happened here. And so, he is now eligible for the games against Indiana State and against Illinois. And so then he'll play four games. I guess the idea from the NCAA might be, yeah, you get four games just like any other guy who redshirts, but you don't get the full season. Maybe that's what they'll argue at the next hearing. But yeah, the hearing has been pushed back from today. It was supposed to be today. And it is pushed back to September 24th, so 2 weeks from today. And it's possible that Lewis Moore's lawyers are trying to just kick this can down the road until the end of the season. I think maybe the NCAA is like, all right, there's a little bit of them that's like, okay, we're not going to get a ruling from the judge on this, but that means we can't lose. And we'll just kind of basically run out the clock and say, well, that was a one-off, and there's no precedent set from this. They just don't want Lewis Moore to become another Diego Pavia, where like he upends the way the rule had worked before. And so if he plays the whole season, but the judge never actually makes a ruling on whether that's allowed, then it might be one of those things where it's kind of a one-off and he doesn't become a precedent-setting guy. So we will have to see how that works. But he will be eligible, and that's good because he leads Indiana in interceptions and in tackles right now. So he has played very well through these first two games.
Not only that, he's one of only four players in the country to have an interception in every game his team has played. So very, very important piece to this team. And I just, with all that's going on, obviously I am not a lawyer. I don't even think I need to say that. But all of the precedents that are out there, Dylan, of players that are in their sixth, seventh. Have there been people that have made it 8 years?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because of injuries. Yeah, absolutely. There was a guy last year playing for Miami who was in his ninth year, I believe.
Oh, my God. Now, that's beyond crazy. And just because of that, I just don't see how they've already allowed. They've already said, well, it's okay to go outside of the – because the argument is the five-year window. I don't see how they can even argue that now when they've already allowed that on their own premise, on their own – oh, well, this is okay for this. Well, it's okay for this. Well, why is it not okay for that? Because you changed – because they changed the rules after that was done, allowing the JUCO years to not be counted. So that was changed after the five-year thing was already in place. So I think that's going to be – I think that's the argument that they'll win. But, again, what the hell do I know? We shall see. But, a very important piece because Indiana's defense is just continuing to come together. And that would be a major, major blow to him. To the team? Well, no, he'll still get paid. They'll pay him regardless, I think. It would be amazing. Really, I mean, what are you going to do? But I think it would just be a major blow to Indiana. But I and the NCAA has has won some things here recently. They lose everything when they go to court, but they have been doing a little better in certain things. But this one is not. I'm like, yeah, I don't see this being a great argument.
Yeah, no, I don't particularly either. I think that this is not the line in the sand that anyone, including this judge, is likely to draw. But we'll see. Again, it's possible that we never get a ruling on the 5-year rule, and Lewis Moore just plays the whole season, and they just draw the process out until December, and then drop the lawsuit because the season's over. Right, right. It's one of those things where Lewis Moore's lawyers have multiple ways to get this to work. They don't have to actually get a win. They just have to keep delaying the process until December if necessary. So we'll see whether they're able to do that, or whether they actually have to make their main argument at some point. But for right now, yeah, he's eligible for the next two games. I do think it's not ideal for Indiana that they keep doing this in two-game increments here, in two-week increments, because it makes it difficult to plan. But as long as he's playing, that's kind of the main thing right now. Although it is interesting, because Kurt Cignetti did say on Monday, he kind of emphasized it a couple times, that safety is where Indiana needs some work. Like, he called out the safeties by name, saying they need to play better. He said they're not playing badly, but he thinks they can play better. And there were times against Kennesaw State where they weren't lined up fast enough. Like, Kennesaw State was going fast. The call was in fast. Aiden Fisher was relaying the call fast. And then it was the safeties in the back end that weren't getting aligned fast enough. And so he said that specifically. So that's something to monitor is, can those guys improve on Friday against Indiana State and then carry that into the game against Illinois?
Well, they're going to have to, because when they face Illinois, they are going to face an onslaught of the passing game. And they're going to have to be ready for that, because that's going to be the calling card of the Illini. So, but they will have Lewis Moore intact. Hopefully he has a great game, as a matter of fact. But yeah, he's from Poteet, Texas. He went to Poteet High School in Mesquite, Texas, rather. Mesquite, the home of the Mesquite Rodeo, bro. That's not too far outside of Dallas, but he went to Navarro Junior College, and so that's why the suit was filed there. He went to school there. He's from there. Why not file your suit there? I mean, this is a temporary place, so I think he'll win that argument, but again, what the hell do I know? Nada. I'm not going to act like I do. How's everything else going with you, man? How's the week been? Last weekend, we watched Indiana kind of get the train on a little bit more on the tracks. They looked better on both sides of the ball, as a matter of fact. The offense definitely kind of looked a lot better in engaging the passing game a lot more, with 5 touchdown passes, although the dominance came on the ground still with the running game, over 300 yards rushing. This is an element Indiana did not have last year. They were okay at running the ball, but this year they're good at running the ball. When you're popping out 300 yards a game, and I know the talent, the competition has not yet been there, but 300 yards rushing is still, it's a great start especially when you're blending in 3 different guys. Yeah. And pretty equally. Last week, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I think Kalon Black got 9 carries, but the other two had like 11 and 13, very close, a great mixture. I mean, wow, there's not a lot of teams that probably have that luxury other than the bigger teams. So that is going to be a huge boost to Indiana. Of course, a part of that revamped offensive line is a part of that as well.
Yeah, no, I think that the last point there is really important. I think the thing that ties everything together, that the passing game that took a step forward this last week, and then the running game, which has been good for 2 weeks, is the offensive line. It's been really, really good early in the season here. And there were some of those plays against Kennesaw State. You talked about the talent level of Kennesaw State, and you know it's probably not there, right? But, I mean, they did hold Wake Forest to 2.8 yards per carry the week before, so it's not like they're a team that can't do anything against the run. Indiana's offensive line was moving those guys off the ball. There was one run where I think it was Kalon Black got around the edge And they just set the edge so well. There was so much space for him to the left side of that line. It was ridiculous. And they and then of course on top of that, Fernando Mendoza is just sitting back there in the pocket with all the time in the world to survey the field, which, like we talked about before the season, that has to be such a new novel concept for him that he's able to do that. And I think he's handled it pretty well, especially late in that Kennesaw State game. They had touchdowns on five consecutive drives in the second half of that game over a span of 17 minutes and 40 seconds on the game clock. Really, really impressive stuff, moving the ball through the air, on the ground, in almost equal measure. And it is the offense that we hope to see. It's the pieces are there for this to be the same kind of dominant offense that the Hoosiers had last year. Now, it still has to come together. They still have to play against better competition. Illinois looked very good against Duke on Saturday, so we'll see how that goes. But I do think that the pieces are like there. When we looked at this before the season, we thought this could be an explosive offense. And through 2 weeks, especially against Kennesaw State, I have not seen anything to dissuade me from that idea. I think they're really good, and we're going to see how good they can be in the next couple of weeks here.
Yeah, I talked all summer saying that I thought this was a better team than a year ago, because I think the offense is going to be better, not because of the quarterback. I think they had a great quarterback last year in Curtis Rourke, who actually, he had my favorite thing, dead eyes, no emotion. I mean, now I look at, I've used Carson Beck as an example for that in for Miami. When I was watching that Miami Notre Dame game, every time, you know, when he's under center about to start and they go right to the headshot of the quarterback, you could just see he was just like, It was like he was in a doctor's office waiting room. Just, you know, no facial expression. I want that out of a quarterback, because that tells me he is emotionally downplayed. Yeah, he is just boom. He doesn't get high, doesn't get low. And I'm not saying Fernando does either. I think he's a little more excitable, but he's a little more active. But better offensive line, better running game. He's got a cannon of an arm. And what Indiana fans have not seen yet, and with purpose, because of the competition, they're saving this. He has a great deep ball capability. Great deep ball capability. And he has the targets to hit with Omar Cooper Jr. and E.J. Williams and, of course, Elijah Surratt. That is something that's going to happen this year. That's something that people are going to see once they get into the, well, you could see it as soon as the Illinois game, because that's a must-win game. I'll call it right now. It's a must-win game if you have designs on reaching the college football playoffs. If you lose to Illinois, you're done, because you'll be chasing Illinois, Oregon, Penn State, Ohio State, four other teams. There will be no more than four teams from the Big Ten that make the CFP. And if you lose to Illinois, I think you're out already. And that's just my opinion, but you'd have to go beat Oregon and Penn State. I think people would view it that way. If you lost at home to, even though Illinois is a top 10 team, it wouldn't matter, because Oregon, I think Oregon personally is the best team in the country right now. I think they're definitely the best team in the Big Ten. I think that they would beat Ohio State on a neutral field. I think they would beat Penn State on a neutral field. I just think they're already electric. Dan Lanning, he is amazing. He, you know, every year it's like a machine, and they're already firing on all cylinders, and they're only going to get better. We're only in week three.
Yeah. Yeah, they play Penn State. I think the week after Illinois plays Indiana, Oregon plays Penn State. That is probably the game of the year in the Big Ten for me. I think those are the two best teams in the country right now, with Ohio State probably. I think the three best teams in the country right now are Big Ten teams. So Ohio State, Oregon, and Penn State, I think, are the three best teams in the country in some order. And we're going to find out what that order is as the season goes. And then I think that those three are pretty much locks to make the playoff. And then, yeah, you're either Illinois or Indiana is probably going to be the fourth. And I think you're exactly right. I think it's going to the whichever one it is, it's probably going to be decided in that game. Fortunately, at Indiana on September 20th, under the lights, NBC. Like, I mean, that's something that we haven't talked about yet, is that this is it has been a very long time since there's been a ranked on ranked matchup at Memorial Stadium under the lights.
I asked that question the other day. When's the last time Indiana had a top 10 team at home that they were actually, I think they're going to win the game personally, but that you actually go into it thinking, well, not only do they have a shot, I think they're going to win. Usually when that happens, it's Ohio State coming in or Michigan coming in or Penn State coming in with a high ranking, especially back in the old days of the Big Ten East, when that was a regular thing, it would happen. But everybody was like, yeah, well, whatever. This is not that. This is an opportunity that I think Indiana wins. None of those other games did anybody think, well, they've got a shot here. No, yeah. It was like, oh, well, the stadium would be full because Ohio State would bring thousands of people, or Michigan, yada, yada. That's not it now. And that is an incredible thing. Memorial Stadium will be electric. I hate to keep talking about a game that's a week away. It's kind of hard not to, because of what you just mentioned, how big that's going to be. It's going to be on prime time, 7:30 under the lights. The Big Ten doesn't get night games hardly. Think about that. I've talked about that. The Big Ten needs more night games. You always see the SEC playing those games. And so I think it's good for the Big Ten, because more people get to see that. And if you can go on prime time, and not only you're playing in a top 10 matchup, if you win that game, that will change the minds of a lot of people. And because I'd say the majority of, whether it's pundits or whatever, right now they view Indiana still with some old Indiana stigma. And then they add in the last, they didn't have a great schedule last year. That kind of plays in. Not the case this year, so it doesn't matter. You're playing a top 10 team right off the bat. Then you have to go on the road to play Iowa. Very, very tough place to play. Then you've got to go on the road at Oregon. So, there's no talk of schedule this year, but you got to keep the main thing, and that's Indiana State coming up next. We've got to take a break. The great Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette is with us. We're back with plenty more on Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Wednesday. Made it to the halfway point of an unbelievably another beautiful week, Dylan. I'm sure even up in Fort Wayne, the beautiful weather has reached up there. It is just been the stretch has been unbelievable. There's just been no interruption, and I checked in the break, and this carries through the game against Illinois a week from Saturday. 83 degrees for a high, so that means by the time kickoff comes around, it's going to be into the 70s, and that the Indiana fans, they've been showing up, but a lot of them stay out in the tailgate lots, and then they leave during the game. And I get it. When you're playing teams that blah, blah, although they leave a little too early in my belief, but that Indiana, the football fans have not truly become football fans yet. They're fans of this success at the moment, but it's going to take a long time to cultivate fans, to cultivate them into being those that stay longer, because everybody else can, and people can say, well, yeah, they're not playing anybody. Guess what? Other programs, everybody does the same thing. Do you think Alabama doesn't play a Troy? Do you think that Georgia doesn't play a Georgia State? Yes, they do. I mean, I remember Alabama getting 90,000 people for a spring game. That's their own game. They're playing nobody. So, it's going to take a while. And I get that. Now, will that be the case against Illinois? No. unless, you know, there's a blowout on the wrong way, I think that's going to be an electric environment. It might be the best environment Memorial Stadium has ever seen because Indiana, I think, wins the game, like I said. But whether they do or not, the fans think that either they will or can win that game. That has never been the case against a top 10 matchup.
Yeah. I mean, the stat that I saw was this is the first ranked on ranked, not just top 10, ranked on ranked home game for Indiana since 1993. It's been a long time since they were good and they had a good team coming in. And it's the first ranked on ranked home night game ever at Memorial Stadium. It's never happened before. This is uncharted territory for Indiana. Even last year, the schedule broke in such a way that their biggest game of the season against Ohio State was on the road. And then by the time that Michigan came in, Michigan was unranked. And so it is just one of those things where this is genuinely one of the biggest games in the history of the stadium. And we're 2 weeks out from it, right? You still have to go beat Indiana State on Friday. I don't think they'll have too much trouble doing that, but you never know. Indiana State would love to be the ultimate trap game here. But I do think it is one of those things where it's as big as it gets. It is a top 10 team coming in where you have a chance to win. Indiana might be they might be favored or they might be underdogs by 2 or 3 points. And it's going to be one of those things where they have a legitimate shot to win. And I think that the thing with being football fans, with the fans trying to get there, is don't you want to see your team they're not playing anyone yet. They played Kennesaw State, the fans left. They played Old Dominion, the fans left a little bit. Don't you want to see your team dominate somebody? You don't want to see your team marching up and down the field and playing really well. Like that's the part of the reason when Alabama plays Louisiana Monroe like they did Saturday. They won 73-0, right? Huge win for that team. And the game was never close. It was never in doubt. But the fans were mostly still there in the second half because it was fun to see their team blow somebody out. Right?
Yeah.
I think that's the next step for this Indiana fan base is really enjoying a team blow somebody out.
Yeah, and I get – I don't expect people to stay till the fourth quarter in those games. That's unrealistic. But it's the halftime thing. And, I mean, they're gone. And part of that is because IU gives pass outs. But people get the pass out, but they're not coming back. I mean, it empties like the thing is over. And, you know, IU is not immune or, you know, not alone. Some other programs have that, but the good, solid programs don't. Now, the good, solid programs have been good, solid programs for a long time. But I'll use Kentucky as an example. They get good crowds. And Bob Stoops he could get fired after this season, possibly, because he just hasn't done much these last couple of years. But regardless of that, someone asked about the possibility of game day coming in for that game. And this is the only game that Indiana even has that would even be a possibility on their home schedule. But as I'm looking down the schedule for week 4, the first thing that popped out to me is that Florida is at Miami. But was game day at Miami for the Notre Dame matchup?
They were at Ohio State. They were at Ohio State. Yeah, yeah.
There's a very appealing game because you've got an SEC team in which ESPN has the SEC games. And who has ACC?
ACC is also ESPN, yeah.
Okay, well, I see Florida at Miami. That's the second game on the schedule. I didn't have to go very far down. I would be hard-pressed to imagine that they're not in Miami, especially with two of their own programs there. Right below that, you've got the number 9 Illini coming in to face number 22, Indiana. Florida is unranked, of course, after being upset by South Florida. But that still would be an appealing game for them. As I roll down the schedule, I'm still not seeing anything that would be greatly appealing. Ranked teams, UAB is at Tennessee. There's an example. I promise you, the Neyland Stadium will not be empty at halftime against UAB, no matter what's going on.
Yeah.
Purdue goes to Notre Dame that week. How about Purdue? The Boilermakers, very surprising already. Barry Odom has done a great job. He's bucking for Coach of the Year already. If they've already doubled their win total, starting the season 2-0, and this stat, I keep saying it, is the most amazing stat that I've heard yet. Barry Odom is the first Purdue coach to start his career 2-0 at Purdue since the 60s.
No. You misheard. 1916. 1-6.
What?
1-6. Yes. Cleo O'Donnell in 1916 was the last time that happened. First coach to start 2-0 at Purdue since 1916. Not start a season 2-0. Start a tenure.
His opening, his first year.
Yes.
I think that they said 60s because that's what I clearly heard, but they may have been wrong. But even that stat shocked me. Hell, the 60s shocked me. The 50s would have shocked me more. This is over a century ago.
109 years since the last time it happened. Yep. It's wild. Yeah.
Last year we had Kurt Cignetti doing things like that in Indiana, but that's more understandable because Indiana had nothing. Purdue has had tons of success through the years. And one would have thought Joe Tiller, Jeff Brohm, one of those guys would have easily done that. But Purdue's schedule has not exactly been easy. A lot of times during the Tiller era, they opened up with Notre Dame. They still play Notre Dame, and it's usually earlier in the year, so that plays a part into that. But still, very shocking stat, man.
Yeah,
and now absolutely. I'm even more shocked.
Yeah, and they have USC coming to West Lafayette this week. It's going to be a huge game for them. USC looks like one of the better teams in the country. They've looked fantastic to start the season. And they're actually – USC is ranked fourth in ESPN's, like, football power index based on, like, the advanced stats. They played so well these first 2 weeks, totally unstoppable on offense, like 11 yards per play or something like that. It's been ridiculous. And
so how are they not ranked?
I ranked them as a pollster. I ranked them this week. I ranked them 23rd. I think it's USC fatigue. I think it is one of those things where it's like every year it's like, oh, USC, they're back. And then they haven't been. I think they're really good. I think they're really, really good this year. They could be the fourth Big Ten team that ends up making the playoff over Indiana and Illinois. So we'll see what happens there. But they're really good. And so they're coming to Purdue this week. Purdue is having this whole celebration where they're it's the 25th anniversary of their last Big Ten championship. And so they're having a whole bunch of players from that team come in to celebrate because that team went to the Rose Bowl. So Drew Brees is going to be there, a bunch of other guys. They're going to have a whole celebration of it. They're going to see if they can get one of the bigger wins that program has had in a very, very long time. So we'll have to see which one of those starts is for real, Purdue or USC. And it should be a fun night at Ross Abe this weekend.
Yeah, USC is one of those teams that I'm surprised is not ranked because I agree with you. They are very good. Lincoln Riley has a lot of pressure on him because they have not been USC, but this is a year to look out. They could be a team that goes in and upsets people. The travel is what is going to be not an issue, but when they have to travel back east, and I'm sure they have to do it multiple times, that is going to be the hard part. Not against, and I'm not saying that playing at Purdue won't be a challenge. It will be because Purdue is way better. But I believe that they're just a superior team right now, and it's going to be interesting to see that as their season progresses how that goes. Let's see. They traveled to Illinois on the 27th.
The week after Illinois plays Indiana, they go home and play USC. That's going to be really, really interesting. If if for the sake of argument, Illinois wins that game against Indiana, that's a huge win for Illinois. But then they play an even bigger game then the next week with USC coming in. So Illinois's entire season probably comes down to those two games against Indiana and USC.
Well, and then after USC travels to Illinois, they go back home to face Michigan, who I think that they just don't have the offense again. No. But then on September 18th, they have to come back all the way to Indiana to play Notre Dame up in South Bend, which Notre Dame is a pretty damn good team. They lost against Miami, but they might have been the better team. They just they made mistakes that cost them that game. Notre Dame's a team too. They're going to have to. They've got work to do already now to make the CFP. They can't lose that game against USC. That's there's others on their schedule, I'm sure, that will be tests. They play at Texas A&M this week, I think, but that's at home as well. Wow, what a home schedule Notre Dame has. Damn, USC, Texas A&M coming in. Whew. Let's see. And then
USC goes to Oregon.
Yes, they do.
The second to last week of the season, they go to Oregon, which if USC is as good as I think they might be, that is going to be a heck of a game. That should be a lot of fun. Oh, my God.
That will be a point jarring. That's going to be like a pinball machine. Bing, 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 bing. Or a Las Vegas slot machine going off. Lots of intrigue coming through the Big Ten season. And it's going to be fun to track these different teams because we haven't had that many in the past. I mean, it's deep right now. It's six deep. Michigan is a solid, solid team, but I don't think Michigan is in that upper group. I think that they're right outside of it because of the lack of offense. Their defense does a lot to make up for it, but not enough. And that freshman quarterback that they have is good, but I don't think he's going to be enough either.
Yeah, I saw that game against Oklahoma on Saturday night, and I do think that they're going to be limited by their offense. I think they're for Michigan's reputation is being able to kind of run over people with the ground game, but their offensive line, they've had some injuries to it this year, and it's just not very good especially compared to what they've had in the last couple of years. So I think they're probably going to go somewhere around 8-4, and I think they'll probably finish 7th or 8th. In the Big Ten. I think it's that the top six of the teams we're really talking about here. It's the top three of Penn State, Ohio State, and Oregon, and then it's those next three, Indiana, Illinois, and USC, I think are going to be the six teams that we're really, really looking at as these are the contenders for the playoff. It's going to be four of those six, I think, that make the playoff. It might only be three. The committee might do some weird stuff to try to get some more SEC teams in there because they're mad that they didn't get more in last year. We'll see. But depending on how things shake out, I think it'll be four teams from the Big Ten in the playoff. And that means probably one of Indiana, USC, Illinois. It's going to be those three teams fighting for that last spot. And Illinois's got to play both of them. So we'll see. If Illinois is really as good as they want to believe they are, they will have their chance to prove it when they play those two games. And then everything else that happens after that will be probably gravy for them. But if they win those games against Indiana and against USC, they'll be in. And Indiana probably the same way. If they beat Illinois and hold serve elsewhere and go 10-2, they're probably in, I think. So we'll see how that goes. But it's going to be interesting because I think the conference is pretty deep with really, really good teams this year.
It definitely is deeper. It's not as deep as the SEC, but it is definitely a deeper team. What's up next for you, man?
Yeah, I'll be I got a doubleheader this week for college football. I'll be in Bloomington on Friday night, and then I'll be in South Bend for Notre Dame, Texas A&M on Saturday night. So really looking forward to that. Those are especially Notre Dame, huge, huge game for them. Must win, like you said, after that loss to Miami. It's basically their season is this game. And so we'll see how that goes, but I'm looking forward to both of those games this weekend. Good weekend of college football.
Absolutely. Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette. Make sure you're giving him a follow and keeping up with all of his content as he covers triple K. He's the triple crown winner, man. He covers the Hoosiers. He covers the Boilers as well as the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. Purdue, man. Very, like I said, if Barry Odom can win five games, which I think that they might, he might be bucking for coach of the year. That's definitely a surprising turnaround for those for the Boilers. And that in that game at the end of the year when Indiana has to go to Purdue, that's going to be more difficult than I think people think. Because Purdue will be jacked, but if Indiana is where that they need to be, they should be okay. We'll see. Yeah, Rob Ryan is on the USC staff. That's a crazy thing. We'll talk about that later. But appreciate you as always, my friend.
Absolutely, Jim. Thanks for having me on, as always.
Dylan Sin from the Four Range Journal Gazette joining us. We've got more coming up here from Indiana Sports Beat Radio as Kyle Nednerup will join us. We'll get you caught up on all things going on the high school side in the state of Indiana right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Wednesday. Kyle Nednerup from the Indy Star joining us now. Kyle, how have you been, brother?
Doing well. How you doing, Jim?
I can't complain. Not to rub some salt, but I saw that the Tigers, after having in the midst of a great season, got some issues going on in the front office, man, and it's pretty widespread.
Yeah, I'm just focused on the field right now, Jim. I'm just trying to get
focused on the wins, baby. Focused on the wins. I hear you.
We'll just get to the playoffs. All right.
There you go. That's it. Doesn't it suck? You've waited so long to get back to that, and then goofy stuff like that happens, and it's a shame, but it is what it is. The high school season, man, rolling along. Week four already in high school football, deep, almost to the halfway point of the regular season. It seems crazy. But
yeah, I was talking to some coaches about that. It's just like once the ball kicks off, it's just such a fast season. And, you know, I was out at Fisher's last night. They have the Mudsock game against HSC this week. That's always a huge rivalry game. It's probably the best crowd, or one of the top five crowds in the state every year, at least, I would say, if not the best. And, you know, it's a fun week. It's, you know, the Fishers, HSC, they play in other sports during the week as well, volleyball, soccer, and all that. And it's a really fun week, but then it's over so fast. And, you know, they may play each other again, but, you know, I was talking to the Fishers coach just about, you know, they have the offense over to his house this week, you know, Tuesdays, the defense Wednesday. And, you know, it's like, man, that's a busy, you know, every week doing that. That's a lot of, you know, but he's like, man, it goes so fast. I mean, you kind of, when it's over, you wish it would, you know, keep going, but yeah, it's just for everybody, I think 30 to be to this point, it's hard to believe it goes this fast, but it seems like that every year. It's a kind of a slow buildup to the start, and then it flies by.
Absolutely. This weekend, another round of great games and great talent. What's the big deal going on this weekend?
Well, probably start with that HSC Fishers game, the Mudsock game. Last year, Fishers beat them twice. It's very likely they could play again in the sectional, either the first or second game of the sectional. So, you know, potentially the first of two meetings between them. Fishers won both games last year. They flipped the script a little bit. HSC had been kind of in command of that series, won a lot of, heartbreaking games for Fishers, but Fishers kind of, you know, won two games last year by a total of 5 points. John Anthony Hall, who's now at Stanford, is, you know, he was a big part of those wins. He's gone now, but Fishers has a really good quarterback, Gage Sturgill, who's a Western Illinois commit. You know, one of the best quarterbacks in the area. He got hurt halfway through last year, but he's turned it around or got healthy again. I shouldn't say turned it around. He had a great year last year. He just didn't play a lot because of the injury, shoulder injury. So he's back. You know, they've got some really good skill position guys. HSC has Terry Walker, who's going to Duke, is their quarterback. And again, both teams not very, it's kind of interesting. Neither team is like huge up front. They don't have a lot of big linemen like some of these other 6A teams do, but the skill positions are very good on both sides. And I think it'll be a fun game. You know, some of the other games, Cathedral plays Chittard at Butler. That's always a fun rivalry. It goes back to, you know, the long time. They basically play every year against each other. Very rare they don't play each other. That's always kind of a heated game. Warren Central hosts, they're at Lawrence Central. Both those teams, 2-1, have been playing well in recent weeks. I think that'll be an interesting game for sure. Brownsburg goes to Avon. You know, Brownsburg has rolled the first 3 weeks, even against, you know, that nationally ranked team out of Maryland had a pretty easy time of it. So, you know, I saw Avon last week. I was very impressed, very hard hitting, team. They lost HSC by a field goal, but you know, from a talent perspective, I think they're one of the few teams on the schedule that might, you know, give Brownsburg something. I still like Brownsburg to win, but I think, you know, rivalry game, you know, you never know in those type of games what could happen. So, you know, that'll be interesting game at the very least. And then the other, or at least one of the other big ones, I would say, is Carmel goes to Louisville Trinity. And Kevin Wright, you know, he coached at Trinity for 1 year back in the, I think it was 1999. So, you know, there's some history there. And obviously Kevin coached at Carmel against Trinity for several years as well. But that's a huge test, you know, Carmel going on the road to Trinity, you know, and always, they're always one of the best teams in the Midwest, if not the country. So that'll be a difficult game, but you know, Trinity lost last week to Moeller by a field goal. So, you know, that no crime in that for sure. But I think we'll find out more about Carmel on Friday and how they perform in that game at Trinity.
And that is a matchup of longtime powers as far as Louisville Trinity. They are probably the most decorated football team in the state of Kentucky's history, has numerous state titles at the top level. There, one of the, so that's a difference. It's kind of odd between Indiana and Kentucky. In Kentucky, the power, I don't want to say most, but a lot of the powerhouses are the Catholic schools, whether it's St. X or Trinity or down in Lexington. In Indiana, that's not the case. It's the schools. I mean, not that there's not Cathedral and some others, but the number. Overall number of powerhouses just rotates between just the bigger schools in Indiana.
Yeah, it's interesting. In a lot of states, you know, it'd be interesting to do a study on that and see, you know, because I do see that out of some other states at the highest level, the biggest class teams like Trinity, which I think they're still ranked number one in 6A. I got to check that, but they were last week. But yeah, they're always a powerhouse at the top level. That hasn't really happened here. You know, Cathedral has played in 6A, but hasn't kind of broken through that ceiling of, you know, being the top 6A team. They did do it in basketball, which, you know, that was a couple of years ago, and they were the first, you know, private / Catholic, you know, school to do that in 4A basketball or single class basketball or whatever you want to say in the history of the basketball tournament. So yeah, it really hasn't happened. And there's only a handful of schools you know, enrollment wise and things like that. Cathedral is probably one of them that you would point to have a chance to do that. But yeah, the public schools have dominated at the highest level anyway. And really that's been the case throughout the history of 5 and 6A football. You know, with the 6A, what was that? Probably 2012 or 2013, I think, was the first year of 6A. And it's been, you know, a handful of teams that have kind of rotated it through over the years. But yeah, you haven't seen that. You know, that's an interesting point. And I think probably is similar to other states too, like Kentucky with, you know, the Catholic schools winning at that level. But there's so many big schools here, you know, that, you know, just massive public schools that they've been able to, you know, to still control it.
Yeah, but it's fun to watch because every year it's not always the same teams that dominate in Indiana, and that's always a great thing to see. You want to see flavor. You want to see difference, and that's something that Indiana offers at the highest level, which a lot of times that's hard to do. I remember when I was in high school, and then after that, Columbus East ruled the Hoosier Hills Conference. 12, I don't know if that's where it stopped, but I know they won it for like the 12 straight damn years. They were just this powerhouse in our class that was just, you could get there, but you just couldn't get past them. And Bill Stafford probably was a major reason for that. I don't think he's there any longer, and Columbus East is not kind of the power they were. But then again, I think it's become harder to be that power with more classes. I think there are more classes now. Back then, hell, when I was in high school, there were only three. Mm-hmm. Now there's six. So they've really diluted it, and it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, Bob Gaddis, you know, kind of kept it going there at Columbus East for a long time, and then he retired a few years ago. And, you know, they kept it rolling forever, it seemed like, and then they've fallen off a little bit here in recent years. But yeah, I think it's good. You know, 6A has kind of been a rotation of Ben Davis, Center Grove, Carmel, you know, Warren Central, you know, and then Brownsburg punched through last year. So now you got Brownsburg, Westfield, you know, some of those other teams. So it is, 6A is a lot of fun because you don't have teams just steamrolling everybody. Now, occasionally you do, you know, Ben Davis a couple years ago, but even they had to, you know, once you get to the tournament, man, there's going to be one game at least, probably multiple games where, you know, it's going to come down to the wire. You're not just going to roll over everybody. And we'll see what happens with Brownsburg. I would assume there's going to be games on their schedule where it's not, it doesn't come so easy. Maybe it's this week, maybe it's not. But at some point, you know, certainly in the tournament, they're going to be challenged in a different type of way. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But, yeah, 6A's, I think it's the best. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed for me to find a state that's got, you know, this sort of balance that we have here and just the high level of football we have in 6A, you know, and there's the other classes have great teams too. I'm not knocking it, but it's just, it seems like the balance and the, you know, just kind of the talent and athletes, it's just a different level. Then I would put it up against a lot of states.
And a lot of great games on the docket for this weekend. You mentioned Brownsburg, number one Brownsburg at Avon. That is just going to be a, that will be a tremendous game to watch. Number 13, Ben Davis. I guess it depends on the rankings you're looking at. Ben Davis is at Cedar Grove, who ranked number two on the list I'm looking at. Carmel at Trinity, you mentioned. Lawrence North at North Central. Hamilton Southeastern at Fishers. North Vernon, New Palestine. Tons of really good games this weekend. Indianapolis Bishop Chittard at Cathedral. Chittard is 3-0. Cathedral's 1-2 right now.
Yeah, and Cathedral's record's always misleading. I mean, they lost to Cincinnati St. Xavier last week. You know, they played Brownsburg, you know, so they're not, you know, they don't duck anybody. They're always, you know, the record will never indicate kind of how good they really are. They have struggled on offense a little bit. They did run the ball pretty well last week against St. Xavier, but couldn't finish off drives, couldn't, you know, complete a whole lot of passes. So we'll see what happens against Chittard. Yeah, Chittard doesn't, you know, they haven't won a lot in this series recently, but, you know, it's a game where 2 years ago they did beat them, and you would have thought, I was at the game. They actually finished on a Saturday morning. It was that weird night where the storms came through, and they finished at Chittard on Saturday morning, and Chittard came back and beat them, and it was like a state championship for Chittard. You know, that rivalry means a lot, you know. So a lot of these games this week are kind of rivalry games, you know, that – even the New Pal Mount Vernon game, that's a boundary rail game that they, you know, it's a conference game, but two teams that are close to each other. So a lot of good rivalry games on the schedule this week that, you know, kind of go beyond the normal, you know, just getting a win. It's sort of neighbors versus neighbors and, you know, HSC Fishers, you know, those, a lot of those kids grew up going to school together. You know, the Fishers quarterback told me yesterday, he's like, yeah, it's like playing against brothers, you know, in some way. So those games always mean a little bit more.
Yeah, and so many games this week of ranked teams that I've already mentioned. Warren Central at Lawrence Central, even. East Central goes to Franklin County, and Zionsville takes on Franklin Central. Fort Wayne Bishop Dwenger goes to Carroll. Good shot for them. Penn at South Bend, Washington. So games all over the state with ranked teams. What a that's what I like to see. Mixture. You've got ranked teams from all over. The central part of the state is always going to have a lot of teams. They're just bigger. So there's that numbers thing. But there are plenty of great teams, whether it's in Evansville or Fort Wayne out there or up in the region, that always bring it. Something else going on. We all hate Friday college games. Everybody knows. The coaches hate it. We hate it. Everybody hates it. This week, Indiana has a Friday night game against Indiana State, while Bloomington North and Bloomington South are playing each other, which that is a real shame, to be honest with you, because it's going to hurt both games.
Yeah, it's. I was in the office yesterday, and we were talking about this a little bit, and it's just, I always liked when Tom Allen would come out and kind of rail against it. You know, I always appreciated he would do that. Other coaches do it too. You know, it feels like it was kind of a you know, a unique thing before, and now it feels like it's just kind of the norm. And it kind of shows you again, like, who, if you ever question who's running college football, the TV networks are running it. You know, so you look at Michigan State plays, I don't know when the game is, but they play at USC. It's 11 p.m. Our time. You know, Michigan State will play at USC. I mean, how much sense does that make? It just, you know, so if you ever wonder, like, who's making these decisions, it's all based on television, all the playoff decisions, all the, you know, it's the TV networks basically run all of college football. Unfortunately, they need like a, commissioner to run out, you know, for the best interest of, you know, and it would still be tied into money and TV, but, you know, I don't know what sense, you know, the conference being so spread out is a whole nother topic, but the Friday night football is, I think we've passed the point of it ever going back. But yeah, what if, you know, there's players who probably want to visit IU again, or, you know, and they'll have chances to do that, but you're not going to visit on Friday night. You got a game. So you're not going to have high school players, you know, there'll be no visits unless they're off this week or play, you know, potentially play Thursday or Saturday. But I don't think any games in our state are on Thursday or Saturday this week. So you won't have any recruits from Indiana at that game, which, you know, is kind of silly when you only have a handful of home games every year. But anyway, yeah, we're past the point of it ever going back. But I hope people keep saying how stupid it is.
Yeah, I didn't even. That's a point I didn't even think about, Kyle. Is the visits, and that hurts the players. Opportunities. They only have so much. Their schedule only allows for so much. If they have an away game or whatever, or however it works, it's not a good thing. I always wonder, should Bloomington North and South have rescheduled the game? But they don't care. I don't think it's like, you know, it sucks, but what do you want us to do? High school plays on Friday nights. We're not going to bow down because they're playing. I mean, it is what it is. And, it will definitely affect both places, but that doesn't matter about what's going on the field. And I know that the teams are, hey, we got to focus on the game and we can't worry about any outside noise, whatever it is.
Yeah. And that's the hard thing to me, you know, and this may be a case where, you know, you do consider it because I use playing at home, but you know, the hard thing when I go to games, the Friday night crowds, even for basketball or, you know, other sports, the Friday night crowds are so much better because kids are in school. You know, they're thinking about it that day. There's pep rallies, you know, so you have the buildup to Friday night, which keeps
you kids, get off work. You could go straight to it or whatever.
It's sort of a habit forming. And then Saturdays, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind a little bit. And you don't have that connection to the school day. So you won't get the crowd on Saturday that you would on Friday. Now, this may be a unique case, but it's only, you know, it's one game. I don't know if I'm Bloomington North or South. I don't know where the game's at, but I don't know if you'd want to switch it just for that reason. You know, this may be a game people may more listen to on the radio when their headphones or whatever than have to go to it or you know, watch it on TV just because you wouldn't expect Indiana State to, you know, to be in the game. But it does suck. You know, it's two in-state teams. You wish people could do both. You know, like I said, it's kind of the TV network's call at this point.
Yeah, I think it hurts Indiana more than it does the high school because of the very reason I think that people are going to look at it. For those that are splitting, it's like, they're playing Indiana State. They're going to crush them. They always do. So, you know, I'll wait. The Illinois game's coming, so I'll wait a week, yada, yada. And this is a big game. It's the biggest game of the year for these two teams as far as rivalry goes. And so parents and all of that. It's just a loss all the way around. But, man, appreciate it as always. Hope you have a great rest of your week and enjoy your weekend.
Will do. I'll have the we'll have all the coverage at IndyStar.com. I'll have HSC Fishers on Friday. So should be a fun game. And, of course, we'll have all of it covered at Indy Star.
Make sure you're following Kyle and Rip and – be a subscriber to the Indy Star. Keep local papers alive, man. We got to have them. Appreciate you, brother.
You bet. Thanks, Jim.
Absolutely. Hey, we've got more coming up here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Zach Browning will join us a little bit later. We'll get the lowdown on what Indiana's got going and how their week and preparation is going. We'll talk about the Pick'ems. Man, it's a tough week, tough schedule of games there for the Pick'ems. And, not looking forward to that, but what are you going to do? We've got more coming up. We're back with it right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Wednesday. You have made it through the halfway point. Glad to have you. No matter where or how you're listening, we appreciate you. I hope that your day is going well, and looking forward to this weekend. Anybody out there that has to make a decision between football, and think about the people that live, you know, further away, like Fort Wayne or Evansville, that generally come to IU games. That's going to be a big deciding factor. But I know some people that are coming down from Fort Wayne that don't have to worry about it. They're still coming down to tailgate. Greg and Kate, The Rock, they're making the trip. So there's plenty others as well. So it'll have an impact, there's no doubt. But it is what it is. And so you just got to focus on what's going on the field, and that is Indiana versus Indiana State. And we'll talk about that when Zach joins us. The Big Ten is just top heavy right now. There are more better teams this year. You've got, of course, Ohio State. You've got Penn State. You've got Oregon. Then I think, I don't know if it's Indiana or USC. I'll be honest with you. Boy, USC is looking pretty damn good. And as Dylan said, they're going to be fighting for that fourth, to be one of those four teams in the CFP, and I think they have a shot at it. You've got Indiana that's going to be battling, and it's going to be interesting for the other teams' schedules, like Penn State or Ohio State. What happens if they lose to games that they need to win? I'm just hard pressed to think that the CFP, if it's equal, that they'll take Indiana over one of those two teams, even if they have a very, very similar season. If all things are equal, they'll take the bigger brand. Believe you me. They will take, if Penn State is 10-2 and Indiana is 10-2, they'll take Penn State. If Indiana is 10-2, and Ohio State is 10-2, they will take Ohio State. Bigger brands, bigger money, bigger TV audience, and they can say whatever they want. I'm pretty confident that's how that would go. But that's why you have to take care of your own business. You've got to take it out of the hands of those people. Now, that's going to be very difficult for Indiana, but hey, you know, everyone's got a tough schedule. As a matter of fact, I'm wondering, USC's, I looked up their schedule a minute ago, and I need to pull it back up to see what their season is going to be like as far as their tough games. But their issue is traveling. They have to travel back east. They have to travel back east for Purdue, which it should be a relatively easy win. They're home to Michigan State, but then they come back to Illinois. Then they're back home for Michigan. Then they're back to Indiana for USC. That follows a trip to Nebraska. They're home to Northwestern, which, you know, who cares? They're home to Iowa, which, who cares? But then they travel up north to Oregon. That travel back east is going to be taxing. You know, you come back to Indiana for Purdue. You come back to Illinois. You come back to Indiana again for Notre Dame, followed by a trip to Nebraska. Those four games are going to be tough for USC. That travel is going to wear. I know people think that it doesn't. Well, we've seen Big Ten teams going west, when you cross more than two time zones, it becomes very difficult. I think Penn State became just the second Big Ten team in a while last year to win one of those games. So don't think that it doesn't matter. It do. It absolutely does. So we'll see how that plays out. But also, you've got, who else are we talking? Illinois has a cakewalk of a schedule. They've got some games, but their schedule is relatively easy. That's one of the reasons why This is a must win for Indiana. You not only do you need the win to that gives you a top 10 win on your resume. Bam. Something they did not have at all last year. That would be a great stamp on your resume. A top 10 win. Boom. Can't take that away. Then you're going to rise in the rankings, of course, yourself. But Illinois doesn't have that many opportunities to get those kind of wins. So if they lose to Indiana, their opportunities go down. Now, I spoke about the Indiana-Illinois game. Well, that's followed by that home game against USC, and that is going to be a very difficult game for the Illini. Even though USC is traveling, if they're smart, they'll get in, get acclimated. I think that that's just going to be a hell of a fun game. I think USC might win that game. And if they do, that ends Illinois' hopes at all for making the CFP. They play after that, not right after that, but they have a game against Ohio State. And that is the only game of substance on the remainder of their schedule. They play Indiana, USC, and Ohio State. Those are their three quote-unquote opportunities for quality wins. You lose to Indiana, I think they lose to USC, and I think they lose to Ohio State, even though two of those three are on at home. We'll see, but that's just my thoughts at the moment. But Indiana needs that because it's a game. Boy, you got to knock people down a few pegs. So winning that game against Illinois will help them knock them down a rung, starting to elevate Indiana. And Indiana has an advantage over USC right now, and they don't play. So Indiana is already ranked. If they can get that win over a top 10 team, that is going to really boost them in the rankings. USC will finally make it into the rankings after they get another win, in my opinion, as this week at Purdue. I think once they beat Purdue, then they will they'll be 3-0 and they will be ranked in the top 25 next week. I'm pretty solid about that. But Indiana is going to be far ahead of them. And then how it plays out after that, then it becomes a little bit of a ping pong game. And USC having that Oregon game at the second to the last game of the year, that'll be a tough one. And they have to go to Notre Dame. So, it's a game, man. It's a game of slots and who's where. Interesting to watch as this season progresses. Illinois, Indiana, and USC are the three teams. I'm not talking about Michigan because I probably should, but I just don't think Michigan is going to have the offense. Now, they're going to win some games because of their defense. Great defense does great things. It allows opportunities that you normally don't always get. David asked, how high will IU jump in the rankings if they beat Illinois? Well, that's dependent upon what happens in front of them. They're not going to jump people that win. They're not going to just be catapulted because, hey, it's Indiana. And unless Indiana were to just wipe Illinois, they're going to move up probably five, maybe six spots. But it's also dependent on what happens to the teams in front of them. Who loses? You know, and if there's a team that loses, do they fall enough for Indiana to move in front of them? So, Andrew thinks that Indiana and Illinois should swap places if they win. Well, that would seem to be the way it goes, but unfortunately, that's not how That's not how it happens. I talked yesterday about a voter I saw that said, well, I already had this team in the rankings, so that's why I didn't rank this team above them. That makes no sense. It's who's better? What's the better team? But that's just my take on that. We'll see how that works out. But, hey, everything's in Indiana's hands. Everything's in everybody's hands. Eric asking if there's a chance that Washington has a good team this year. Illinois has to go there right after Ohio State, and Washington is only a few spots below Illinois in the FBI. Washington is good. They're one of those teams, you know, I haven't talked about them. I should. Kind of forgot about them. Good point, Eric. Washington does have a good team this year. And playing at Washington is a beast. It's tough. It is loud there at the Puget Sound. They relish making that place loud. And it's going to be, that's the tough game. Because then you talk about travel. You've got Illinois traveling that two time zones. That's a tough, tough deal to overcome. And you're right. That could be the another difference maker for the Illini, but Indiana has to win. And I'm kind of skipping over the Indiana State game. We'll get into that when Zach joins us here in a little while. But let's be honest. The only thing in that game we're talking about is the improvement of Indiana. What do they improve at the defensive spots where they talk about needing improvement? It's safety. Do they improve on the defensive line? They've done it. They did an okay job last week. They did not allow over 100 yards, but they gave up several plays of 15 yards or more. That's got to end, and that has to end fast. You give teams like Illinois or whomever chunks of yards, they're going to eat you up because they've got a great passing game. They will eat you up. But you can stop it before it starts, and that's what has to happen. Last year, Indiana was all over the NCAA stats for football, leading in so many categories on both sides of the ball. This year, a little bit slower start for the Hoosiers. I'll pull that up in a little bit when Zach joins us, and we'll talk about where Indiana is currently. They're not in the top 10 in scoring offense, nor are they in the top 10 in scoring defense. But guess who's number one in scoring offense? The USC Trojans. Number three, Oregon. 5, 6, 7. Number seven, Eric, it's Washington. So there you go. Right now, Washington averaging 54 points per game. Southern Cal averaging 66 points per game. Oregon averaging 64 points per game. Now, on the defensive side, BYU, 1.5. Yikes. But number two, Ohio State, 3.5. Minnesota at the sixth spot, averaging 5. Wisconsin at 7, averaging 5. Penn State, 8, averaging 5.5. Maryland, number 10, averaging 8. That's going to be a tough road game for the Hoosiers. Don't think it won't be. Maryland has improved. Surprised the hell out of me. Michigan State is better. It has been a little surprising how some of these teams have improved. That Maryland I talked about, they lost so much, but yet they're better than they were a year ago. It's crazy. It is absolutely nuts. But that's what you're supposed to do. And boy, hats off to Mike Locksley at Maryland. I mean, when you're dealing with all that they're dealing with, they lost, I mentioned their quarterback. He's now the quarterback for Wisconsin. or he was. He got hurt, didn't he? Then you have Roman Hemby, all Big Ten running back, who is Indiana's workhorse. So that's where we are. Indiana's going to have to kind of bump themselves up on the stat lines. And we'll see how that goes throughout the season. If they can get better, I think that they will. I think this offense will continue to come together. We saw a vast improvement last week in the passing game with Fernando Mendoza getting a lot more comfortable with his receivers, especially and particularly with Elijah Surratt, who pulled in three touchdown passes. They connected three times. Shows you why they need to. He needed to connect with him, and he talked about that in his post game, how he needed to target him more. We'll go ahead and take our break. Zach Browning is going to join us next, and we'll talk more about this upcoming game for the Hoosiers. That and much more once we return to Indiana Sports Beat Radio on all of the great stations like 97.7 The Ref in Evansville, WJLB up in the region, and Fort Wayne's only sports station, 1380 The Fan. Keep it locked right here where you got it throughout the day as you travel around. Great sports content all day long. Back with more right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, coming to you on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Joined now by Zach Browning from thehoosier.com, part of the On3 Network. Zach, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Jim. How are you?
Doing fine. Been talking about the Big Ten, and all things that are coming up. Some big games. Indiana off, obviously taking on Indiana State on Friday, the last of their three non-conference games. Which a tune-up for the huge matchup coming the week after that. But Indiana has to continue to improve. Last week we saw improvement on the offensive side with the passing game, with Fernando Mendoza finding Elijah Surratt three times in the end zone, four times overall in the day for touchdown passes, and Indiana eventually threw a fifth with Alberto. But they still dominated on the ground as well. A great balanced offense, something they didn't really have last year. They were more of a passing attack, which the passing attack is going to continue to evolve as this season goes on and Fernando gets more and more comfortable. But they to have this rushing offense that is put up 300 yards a game so far is a great sign. It's a great sign of the improved offensive line and the improved backfield.
Yeah, last year, you're kind of right. It was a good rushing attack. It wasn't necessarily a super potent or explosive rushing attack. Yes, there were some big runs, but I mean, Indiana fans saw it firsthand with Roman Hemby last year on a 75-yard touchdown run in Memorial Stadium against IU. Roman Hemby's got explosiveness. We've already seen Lee Beebe. He's got explosiveness. Kalon Black, maybe a little bit more of a 2-3 yard kind of guy if you need a couple of yards here or there, but he's got the ability. He's got it in there somewhere to break off those 20-plus yard runs. So I think this rushing attack this year for IU is a little bit more explosive. And I think you're also seeing in the run game, it's helped out this year by the fact that Fernando Mendoza has a little bit more mobility than the one ACL Curtis Rourke did a season ago. I mean, I think the running backs combined in week one, Jim, for 270 rushing yards, and Curtis Rourke pushed that over the 300-yard mark. It was the running backs that got over the 300-yard mark themselves in week two. But I think you're starting to see it all kind of come together. And obviously, Indiana's still not really showing too much as far as their creativity and the kind of exotic looks offensively. They're trying to really hold that. I mean, you don't really need to show off those exotic schemes and looks during the first 3 weeks of non-conference. But I think this Indiana offense, again, we've been talking about it all fall, really. It's more talented on paper than last year's offense. And I think you're starting to kind of see the talent is starting to come together. It's starting to gel, and you're kind of starting to see that on the field.
Absolutely, and they will definitely need to do that. As I said, a huge game looming. Last year, Indiana's schedule could not have been set up any better unless the coach did it. Not only did they have what they had, every game seemed to get more difficult as the season went on all the way through. Well, this year, that's not the case. You get done with these non-con games and bam, it's a Rocky One coming in with Indiana taking on a very, very improved and top 10 Illinois team that everybody, there's a lot of people that think Illinois is going to make it to the CFP, which if they beat Indiana, that is going to propel them in that because their schedule is kind of light. And it would definitely allow for a better opportunity. Indiana, on the other hand, they also, you get this win, that's going to propel Indiana in the minds of the CFP people, AP voters. They'll obviously move up pretty good in the AP poll. And I mention that because USC probably not getting the attention they deserve or the credit they deserve. They're number one in the country in offense, scoring offense at 66 points a game. And that's not because they're playing Georgia Southern every week. While they are playing lesser talent, they look together already. And like we saw Indiana, they are a work in progress that has gotten much, much better. And I think we'll end up being extraordinarily potent. USC is already potent.
Yeah, USC is an interesting case, too, because Jaden Maiava has been really fantastic. He's been one of the more surprising quarterbacks in the conference. But going back to that Illinois and this Illinois IU game, this is probably the most important game on the calendar for both of these two teams because of what you mentioned. If you're Illinois, the only other difficult game you have on their schedule, the only other ranked team you play is Ohio State. Probably not going to win that game. Ohio State is Ohio State. They might run the table in the Big Ten. They're looking like they're a favorite potentially for another college football playoff national title. But if you're Illinois and you lose this Indiana game, that means you go into the Ohio State game, meaning if you lose that game too, so if Illinois loses both to Ohio State and Indiana, they would have no ranked wins. They're 10-2. I'm not sure a two-loss Illinois team gets into the college football playoff with their best win of the season being against a Wisconsin team that maybe makes a bowl game this year. So that's why this game's important for Illinois. If you're Indiana, it's kind of obvious. This is a game you need. You need to probably win this game. You need to probably beat Iowa the week after because at Oregon, at Penn State, not that Indiana can't win those games. It's just the likelihood of Indiana winning those games are much, much, much slimmer than winning a home game against Illinois and going to an Iowa team that hasn't been as good to start the year. So that's why this game is so important for both of these two teams, because it's a more winnable game than some of the other games left on their schedule. And you realistically, both of these two teams probably need this one if they want to make a college football playoff. So that's why if you're Illinois, it's a must-win game. If you're Indiana, it's a must-win game. And only one of them can come out on top, and we'll see what happens on next Saturday. It's going to be a great atmosphere. It's going to be a great game. I'm interested to see kind of neither of these two teams have played really anybody up to their caliber at this point of the season. So I'm interested to see kind of what we've seen so far through the first 2+ weeks of the season. What kind of stands out? Can Indiana's defense take advantage of Luke Altmyer? I know Duke just passed for, I think, 300+ yards against Illinois, despite losing by 26 points. So what can Indiana's passing attack do there? It'll be a great game for sure.
Yeah, and Indiana has that ability to do just that, but they also have that running game to back it up. And I think that that is going to be a difference maker for the game against Illinois. Now, we'll have all week to talk about that, but it's just hard to not talk about it because, you know, taking on Indiana State, while I don't mean to disparage the Sycamores, it should be another easy win for Indiana as for two reasons. Number one, they're coming together more each week. They're getting better each week and they're just a better team. So that's a game that they should walk in. But you got to play it. Looking at that game, what does Indiana State bring? They're 2-0, which a little unusual for them, but that includes wins over McKendree and Eastern Illinois. It's Kirk Mallory, the son of former coach Bill Mallory, still the head of the Indiana State team there. But their Achilles heel has been third downs, man. They're only 28% on third downs. And with a defense like Indiana that's also getting better, we haven't seen Indiana really attacking people yet. Not a lot of sacks, not a lot of rushes and all of that, but that's probably coming as well.
Yeah, and it's funny because the fact that we're talking this much about the Illinois game is exactly why Kurt Cignetti preaches to his team, take it one week at a time, because if we're all talking about the Illinois game, you know his team, deep down, it's just human nature, is thinking about the Illinois game as well. That's why he preaches one week at a time and keep your focus on that next game being Indiana State. It's interesting. It's a tough spot for Indiana State to be in. Yes, they started 2-0. Yes, it's a better start than they've had in years past. But at the same time, they just lost their starting quarterback. Elijah Owens, a collarbone injury last week against Eastern Illinois in that second quarter. So Keegan Patterson's going to have to take over the starting quarterback job. And Indiana kind of dodges a bullet there. Not that the result was dependent on if Indiana State's starting quarterback was playing or not. But Elijah Owens, the former starter who got hurt, was much more of a Colton Joseph type of guy from Old Dominion. Very, very quick. Great with his legs. Was one of the leading rushers on the Sycamore team. Keegan Patterson, not so much. So this will be really the first game of the season where Indiana doesn't have to be too concerned about the quarterback using his legs. Keegan Patterson is quick. He is capable of, you know, extending plays, getting out and running, but he's more of a pocket passer, more of a guy that wants to throw the ball rather than run the ball, which is something that Indiana hasn't necessarily played against this season, and they've struggled a little bit with those running quarterbacks. But this is an Indiana State team. You mentioned it. They've struggled on third down. I mean, this is just, we'll put it simply, this is a lesser opponent for Indiana. This is the weakest opponent Indiana will play all season long. It's the only FCS opponent Indiana will play all season long. Teams have had success in the red zone. Teams have had success on the ground too. I think it's around 200 yards, around 170, around 180 yards per game on the ground that the first two opponents for Indiana State were able to pick up. So all the numbers are good, but you have to take them with a grain of salt. Those came against lesser opponents too. This wasn't a Big Ten team that Indiana State knocked off in weeks one or two. There wasn't a FBS Power Conference team. So you have to kind of take the numbers with a grain of salt. But that third down kind of percentage, Jim, that is worrisome if you are Indiana State, converting on 28.6% of your third downs, just 6 for 21 on third downs against two teams that aren't great, but you still win and you're 2-0. So
a big part of that, though, is you mentioned the quarterback, Keegan Patterson, not a thrower, man. And you can't just run the ball every time on third down, but he is not very consistent. His completion percentage around 50%, only 17 completions last week, I believe. And then you add to this, Indiana State is winless against Power Four programs in program history. 0-37 since Kurt Mallory took over in 2017. They're 0-7. More importantly, they have an average margin of defeat of 32 points per game. The last 3 years, twice against Purdue and once against Indiana, the margin of defeat is 146-7. And that includes Purdue being horrible for those 2 years. Absolutely horrible. So that says a lot right there.
Well,
there's also no spread on this game this week. So that tells you a lot.
Well, I mean, yeah, if you just look at the fact that Purdue beat this team 49-0 last year, last year's Purdue team that did not beat an actual FBS team, that was their only win last year. If last year's Purdue team is beating you 49-0, and then that team comes into Memorial Stadium and loses 66-0, that same Purdue team, you can kind of it's not a far reach to assume that this game will not be close on Friday night.
The only thing for Indiana, the offensive line might get their best challenge of the year, as the Sycamores defensive line specifically, they lead the Missouri Valley in sacks with 8 so far. They had 3 sacks and 8 tackles for loss in their opener, and 5 sacks and 14 tackles for loss last week, bringing their total to 22 TFLs in 2 weeks. And so the offensive line probably needs a good challenge heading into the Illinois game.
Yeah, and what you get with Indiana State, that defensive front and Logan Wilson and Jaden Childers, is you get two two FBS transfers. Those guys both transferred from Western Michigan. So obviously not power conference football, but still FBS football. Those are quality teams. I mean, if you think about a transfer from Western Michigan, that's pretty much the same level where a guy like CJ West transferred from last year, and we all know how good CJ West was at Indiana. So a Western Michigan transfer, two of them on that defensive front, definitely not something to look over for Indiana. Logan Wilson himself has 6 tackles for loss, 2.5 sacks already this season in just 2 games. So while, yes, it's a decent offense or decent defensive line for an FCS team, I think it'll be somewhere around maybe the ODU defensive line, maybe a little worse than the ODU defensive line. I think it's probably a better defensive front than Kennesaw State. We saw the amount of push that Indiana was able to get there, both in the rushing game and the passing game. But we'll see. I'm more curious about what the defense is able to do. Kurt Zanetti talked about, you know, the struggles that his safeties have had and how they need to improve at safety. Indiana will have a chance to improve at safety against Indiana State and kind of work out all the kinks before that big game against Illinois. Also, the defensive line. Mikhail Kamara picked up his first sack in week 2 against Kennesaw State, but he hasn't been the disruptive guy that I think he wanted to be, and I think Indiana fans were expecting him to be. And obviously, it's a little bit more difficult to rack up sacks when you're playing a quarterback that can escape the pocket like Indiana did in the first 2 weeks. So we'll see if Mikhail Kamara can kind of wreak havoc on Friday night. I'm expecting him to have a big game.
And he also doesn't have quite as much help as he did a year ago. The line's still improving and getting to that point. So, yeah, I agree with that as well, and we'll see how that goes. Plenty of good games coming up, and the Hoosiers will have opportunities to get done what they need to get done as their schedule becomes very challenging after this non-conference game. So getting through that unscathed is of the utmost importance, but most importantly is to improve on both sides of the ball. Lewis Moore, a big part of that defense, one of only 4 players in the country that has an interception in each game. So we'll see how it goes. Zach, hope all's well, brother, and you enjoy your weekend. Appreciate you as always.
Yep, thanks for having me, Jim. Always happy to be here.
Appreciate you. Hey, make sure you go to thehoosier.com, part of the On3 Network, and subscribe. You can do it for $1 and get 50% off, and you get a free subscription to The Athletic. They've got 20% off of merchandise as well, and you can go to The Athletic. Appreciate you, brother.
Thanks, Jim.
Zach Browning from thehoosier.com. That's going to wrap it up for us today. Can't thank each and everybody enough. Dylan Sin, Cal Nenrip, Zach Browning. Most importantly, thanks to each and every one of you. Keep it locked where you got it throughout the day. We're back tomorrow to do it again. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
When it comes to apparel and promotions, FreeThink has you covered, literally, whether it's 24 or 200 shirts for sports leagues, businesses, or groups. FreeThink Apparel and Promotions can also create your very own merchandising store. FreeThink Apparel and Promotions did it for Indiana Sports Beat Radio, and they can do it for you. Whether it's screen printing, embroidery, digital printing, promotional products, vehicle wraps, or anything else under the promotional line. See what FreeThink Apparel and Promotions can do for you at FreeThinkApparel.com.